what's going on? It's the homie Mez. Y'all tuned in to Mez Drinks and Chill. It's another episode. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. I got the homie Lula in the building.
What's up?
What's going on?
How are you?
I'm cool. What's up with you?
Appreciate
you being here, I should say.
I'm excited. I feel like this is a long time coming.
It is, man.
We always had in passing,
right.
I think we have a lot of mutual friends.
Facts.
But this is the first time we've actually been one-on-one.
You're one of my most requested guests.
Oh, please.
No, I swear to you. My homegirl, Shonda, it's a couple other girls, or women, I should say, who always hit me up like, yo, you got to rock with her. Like, she's so dope. And she's from the city. And she's East African. Like, y'all got to rock with her.
Yeah. No, my brother, Face, who I know y'all are, good friends.
Yeah, that's the homie.
He reached out to me and was like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mentioned the podcast, and he was like, do that.
That's dope.
And
shout out to Face.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Face. But what's going on with you? How you been? Everything?
Yeah, everything is everything. I mean, obviously, we're in a pandemic, but,
right.
My husband, Brian, and I, we just recently moved back to Charlotte, which I'm super excited, to be here.
Yeah.
This is my home, my family, my friends. I've been here forever. So
West Side?
West Side, listen. Through and through. Okay, West
right.
Side made me. But, there was something larger pulling me back home. I've poured a lot of myself into this community, and I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. So as much as I love New York, and as much as New York really sharpened me, right? Certain skills
right.
that only New York can,
mm-hmm.
I want to really apply all that I've learned there back home.
How long you been back?
Literally 2 weeks.
Oh, damn. You're fresh
two
back.
2 weeks, fresh out.
Yeah.
Okay. But what, no, I, go ahead.
What made you leave?
I mean, to be honest with you, it's been, almost 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
No bullshit. Every single day I woke up like, how can I get back to Charlotte?
Really?
Honestly, truly. Just because it feels like, I feel like this is where my fight is, right?
Right.
I do a lot of community work. I do a lot of political work. And I feel like, what we just saw in Georgia is what I want to do here in North Carolina.
Shout right? out to Stacey.
Right. And all the Black women organizers and activists on the ground.
Facts.
But I think that's possible here, and I feel like I'm capable of doing that work. And I feel like, the pressure that comes with that,
I'm
the type of person who can accept that.
It's a lot of pressure.
But also I'm not alone, right?
True.
I walk with 1,000, right?
Yeah.
And I also work with a bunch of individuals who care a lot about community and political work here.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, when Black women are censored, and also when Black women are in a position of power, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can do amazing things. I'm someone who deeply believes that community is the only thing that's going to save us. So
that's a fact.
I'm here to really, double down on that.
Yeah. And what all do, it's probably easier to name what you don't do, because you it seems like you do a lot.
Yeah.
So do you mind running down some of your resume?
I mean, yeah. So, I actually graduated from UNCC and I majored in English, right?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly thought I was going to be a journalist when I graduated.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until someone in my life who told me hey, I think you'd be great at organizing. There is an organization called the League of Conservation Voters, which is a nonprofit, a national nonprofit organization that focuses on environmental issues.
Right.
And I was like, all right, let me see. And they were paying out the wazoo. And
yeah.
Me graduating, being a fresh out graduate, I was like, I want to make sure that I have a job fresh out of college. Right. We
right.
were still coming off the 2008, 2009 financial crash.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends who had graduated years prior still couldn't find a job.
Yep.
So I was like, here, I have an opportunity. I'm going to take it. Regardless of, I didn't know community organizing was a thing. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously Barack Obama made it sexy,
but
I really didn't know it was something I could get paid doing, right? And
yeah.
paid well. So, I went to work and it was the first time I was like, wow, it's nothing but Black organizers here talking about environmental racism, right? And different things that are happening, right? That was the first time I learned about coal ash being dumped in Black communities.
Wait, what?
Coal ash, right? So when you hear about Duke Energy, and don't come for me, Duke.
Yeah.
But it's so many different things that are happening in Black communities where, because we're working two or three jobs to make ends meet, we're
yeah.
making sure that our kids have a quality education.
Right.
We're making sure the lights are on and food is kept on the table. We don't have time to really care about what's happening in our environment.
Right.
And obviously that's not all of us, but
yeah.
most of us don't know what's happening environmentally. So it was the first time I was thinking wow, I care deeply about what happens to my people regarding environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I also realized this is not what gets me up in the morning, even though environmental issues are super critical, super important, especially in this moment of climate change, right?
Facts.
I care deeply about what happened to Black women and what continuously happens to Black women. So I found myself an opportunity where I said, okay, I'm really good at organizing people.
Right.
I'm really good about relaying a message that affects people, especially Black people. And mind you, I'm still organizing on the West Side, you know, a couple miles away from where I'm from. So I had an opportunity to work with a local nonprofit organization called Action NC that focused on, immigration issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, asked the executive director, hey, I care a lot about making sure Black women are registered to vote and making sure we're organizing our political power. And he gave me an opportunity to really do my thing.
Yeah.
So I was able to create something called Women Voting Our Values. And it was really organizing women on what things are foundational to us as a community and how can we organize and mobilize when it's time to vote. Mm. So I created a workshop around that. I got paid to do it. And it really, you know, for the first time gave me an opportunity to really see myself as a leader in the community.
Yeah.
And I honestly feel like we're all leaders in the community.
Yeah.
We just haven't really identified that we can be, right? We have certain skill sets that we bring to the community and things that we do. Like, for instance, now, like you have this podcast, which is a global podcast that is connecting with people across the world, right?
Facts, yeah.
There's a power in that.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we, you know, bring all of our qualities and our talents to the table to really build a community and a power that we want to see?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm interested in right now.
That's dope. That's really dope. Is that something you were, like, do you feel like you were born to be a leader, or is that something like?
I mean, I'm Somali, so naturally, okay? But no,
Shout out to all the Somalis.
Right. You know, it's coming from parents who are immigrants and having to really live in a space of survival, right? Because I feel like when you have to live in a space of survival, you're different, right?
Yeah,
you're ready for the world. And you understand that I have to do whatever I can do to make ends meet.
Yeah.
If that means selling water on the street, doing whatever it is, right? Working these jobs that most people kind of frown upon.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a family who's willing to do whatever in order to survive. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, but, you know, my parents really showed me what hard work and work ethic looks like, right?
Right.
My mom, who works in education here in Charlotte, told me when she was younger how she wanted to come to America and have a quality education, how people laughed at her.
Yeah.
And now she's helping people start their educational journey.
Ain't
right?
that dope? Were you born here in America?
Yeah, I was born here.
Oh, really?
I was born in Brooklyn and I moved to Charlotte when I was 8. And, you know, for me, it's like, wow, that's a powerful story, right?
Hell yeah.
And, you know, my dad, it's a funny story, but he actually came to this country. He worked for somebody for 3 months as a janitor and said, this ain't for me.
Yeah.
And he literally was just like, I'm going to figure it out. And my great uncle was here and he started working for him, saved up his money, was afforded the opportunity to go in business with my great uncle.
Yeah.
And after that, saved up enough money to do his own thing and start his own business.
Right.
And from then on, he was a businessman, third grade education. And to be honest with you, that can only happen in a country like America.
Exactly.
And, you know, this place isn't great.
No, it's not.
You know, and we have our pitfalls and there are things that we can sharpen and make better. But at the same time, too, there are a lot of things that we can have in this country with hard work, community, and resolve.
And just a little bit of dedication.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, that's what my parents showed me. So if my parents can do it and have to hustle and grind and survive, and me being American born, college educated, you know, the sky's the limit.
And you had entrepreneurship in your family at early, you said your great uncle had his?
Yeah, I feel like I have the best of both worlds, right? So with my parents, you know, it's the education side and the entrepreneurial side. And
that's key.
Yeah, so for me, it's like being able to figure out what I can do,
right?
With both of those things married together. Like I said, I think the sky's the limit, but also forging a path for myself, right? And for me, that's community. It's building political power because at the end of the day, you know, that's where real power lies. And I understand that it's the business aspect of it, the financial aspect of it, but also like the, you know, inspirational and hopeful aspect of it. Like being in a country like America, it's like not only is the sky the limit, but let's really push that to the limit. Let's figure out what it is that we can dream up, right? Our wildest dreams. I hear that oftentimes, like we are our ancestors' wildest dreams.
Yeah.
I want to push that to the limit. You know, I want to see what I can accomplish, not only as a person, but if I come with 1,000 with me, what can we accomplish together?
Everything.
Yeah. So that's what I'm interested in.
And even being like East African, like that's really one of the main things that's pushed on us is like, yo, you can do anything you want with your community.
Yeah.
And if you got a backing, like you can't fail.
I mean, I'm of the mind that if I have one person in my corner, I'm doing better than most.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the fact that I am Somali, the fact that I have my community I can lean on, but also, you know, I have, you know, other communities, right? I'm a Black woman. I graduated from UNCC. I have that community.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from the West Side. I have that community. You know, I'm Muslim. I have that community.
Yeah.
Like it's so many different things that I can lean on and I'm fortunate to, right? So, you know, I think, you know, for anybody who's listening right now who thinks, you know, maybe you're in a pandemic, you're alone, you're trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do next? I might have lost my job, you know, my family's struggling. Like, find one person to be in your corner.
Yeah.
And build with that person.
That's a start right there.
That's the start.
Yeah. That's definitely how I did. Like, I've been telling Safa for like probably before I started this podcast, maybe like 2 years before, I was just like, man, I want to do a podcast. He was like, just do it. He's like, I got your back. Just start this shit, bro. He's like, I got all the equipment. I got everything. I know a few things about this podcast shit. Just start it. And like you said, it just needed one person. And that gave me the confidence to be like, fuck it, I'm going to jump out there.
Yeah. And look at you now.
Facts. This shit is growing fast and fast. Like this last season that I put out, was just, I got the most, like every season I can literally see growth in myself. But and it just took Sci-Fi backing me up as far as that. But so do you rock with the social media thing?
I do. You know, it's interesting because I recently made a decision to like take a step back from social media, but it's only because I'm trying to figure out the balance, right?
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what aspects of myself do I share and what's sacred.
Because that's why, like, usually before the guest comes in, I try to go through their through their Instagram.
Yeah.
And get a couple of things to feed off of. And then, you know, but then I looked at your page. I'm like, wait a minute, her page, all her pictures, everything is gone.
Yeah, I'm a mystery now.
Yeah, so I was like, that's why I was kind of tiptoeing on, should I bring up your social media thing? But what happened, like, as far as, like...
I don't think there was one thing that happened, but it was more so where I felt like I'm someone who believes in intentionality, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I understand because, you know, of the work that I do as a digital communicator, I understand how these social media platforms are using us.
Right.
Data. Yeah, I want to make sure that I'm using them and they're not using me.
Facts.
So for me, it's like, okay, up until this point, I was just like, okay, I'm sharing myself. I'm sharing my story. I'm connecting with folks. I'm leaning in on what makes us, you know, me vulnerable and for us to build community through the vulnerability. But it got to a point where I was just like, I feel like it's become a chore. You know, I felt like, oh, I have to make these posts. I have to connect with these people. I have to share these messages, respond to these messages. And it kind of felt like, oh, this isn't community oriented like I expected it to be.
Right.
When I moved to New York, I really leaned in on social media because I didn't have the time to be in the community like I was here in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So it kind of filled that void.
Presence. You had a big, so, and that's the part that's most of the time when you have a presence like you had, people don't step back from that.
Yeah.
So that's dope to hear that, you know, you're using it to what you need it to be as opposed to it using you.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest with you, I mean, if I can keep it real, I didn't want to leave Charlotte. It was more so because there weren't really a lot of economic opportunities for young Black people.
Right.
And if, you know, me being in the work, doing the work and a lot of the work that I was doing for free, I was like, wow, like, if my name was John Smith and I graduated from UNC and my parents play golf with, you know, these individuals, maybe I'd be in a better position.
For sure.
But that's not the case. So I would get phone calls where people would tell me like, oh, Lula, we think you'd be great for this.
Yeah.
But there would never be a check accompanied with it.
Right.
So it's kind of like, oh, well, you see my work enough for you to call me.
Yeah.
You understand my value, but you don't identify my value enough to pay me. And that was
the issue.
Which
is so whack, yeah.
Right? So that's why I was just like, okay, cool. You know, I decided to move to New York because of economic opportunities. And also, you know, New York sharpens you. You know, it's make or break, you know? And I remember my father, before I left, my father was just like, I don't think that's a great idea. I think you should stay in Charlotte. Yeah. You have a name here. You have, you know, a work ethic that you've built up here. People know you for the work that you're doing. Yeah. Just work the plan, right? Right. And I was just like, hey, you know, it's not working for me. I'm going to figure it out. And I'm going to let people know, like, hey, you missed out, yeah. right? And I think it was an emotional decision, but also, you know, I think Yeah, I think every decision you make is leading to your ultimate purpose, right? I don't think you can make a wrong turn on what God has already willed.
Destiny?
Yeah, I believe that. So for me, it's like now I'm in a position where I could have only dreamt of the position that I'm in now, where yeah. I can do work that's impactful and be back in the city that I love and I want to continue doing work
right.
and getting paid well to do it. So yeah, like I'm excited about that, but also I'm excited about coming back
yeah.
to really take everything that I left on the table.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's inspirational too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, now's the time like where we have to adapt to the times to, you know, COVID and like this pandemic. But one thing I know for sure is that the most successful people became mm-hmm. successful during a depression. Man. During a pandemic.
That's a fact.
Yeah. For so sure. It's like, there's no reason why we can't do that. We yeah. already have the blueprints. Blueprints. Right. Like, we are students of history.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we take, you know, this blueprint, regardless of whatever obstacles are in our way,
mm-hmm.
apply those lessons learned, and make sure we don't make them again?
And as a black woman, how is it harder as a black woman, or do you feel, because right now it feels like black women are literally leading the charge in so many fucking ways. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't even think just right now. I think we've gone unthanked and unpaid for so long.
That's a fact. All right, but let me, now it's almost like you're getting the praise and the recognition. Like, y'all have been doing it for long, long, long times, mm-hmm. right? But now it seems like everybody's really starting to give y'all the recognition. Not to 100%, but you know.
Yeah, no, I feel what you're saying. Yeah. I think that, here's the thing, is that it's always scary for black women to advocate for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. In the workplace, in life in general, right? There have been so many times where I've known that I'm capable
yeah.
of doing the work.
Right.
I've also known that people have lent on me to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just something that stops people from thinking that black women deserve the pay and the respect and credibility that we do.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, we're expected to do the work for free.
Facts.
I mean, it's no shock because we're in a country where black labor and oftentimes black women's labor built this country.
Right.
So it's expected that right. we're supposed to show up. But also, we don't have the luxury of sitting out because we're at the bottom of the totem pole.
Which is so sad because it's yeah. not only your race thing, it's also your gender.
Right. And yeah. also, we're not alone. You know, below us on the totem pole are Hispanic women, are indigenous women.
Yeah.
So it's like we're accompanied with so many women who fall under the threshold of not getting paid. And it's like, how can we right these wrongs of history, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can we make sure? And it blows my mind. Sometimes, no bullshit, I'll wake up in the middle of the night thinking, the only reason why I'm not getting paid what I'm supposed to is because I'm a black woman.
That's a fact. Yeah.
And it blows my mind to, I don't know how to say this, but so when Mike Brown was killed in mm-hmm. Ferguson, my life changed, right?
How so?
Because my mother raised me to be a person to say, if you're the best in the room, you can't be ignored.
Mm.
So I walked into every space thinking, I'm the fucking best
mm-hmm.
and you can't ignore me.
Talk your shit, yeah.
So then it got to a point where when Mike Brown was murdered,
yeah.
I thought, damn, I could really be in the wrong place at the wrong time, talking to the wrong person in the wrong tone, and it could cost me my life.
100%.
And it shook me to my core. And I remember it was just this visceral reaction, right? And my mother was like, you know, I'm going to call the imam.
Yeah.
He's going to come. He's going to pray. You know what I mean? Yeah. All these things. And I was just like, I feel like you didn't prepare me for the world and you lied to me, right?
Your
it was
mom?
That. Yeah. It was that type of reaction, right?
Really?
Yeah. Where it was like, and that's no, you know, hindrance to her as a parent, but it was just like, you know, you told me just to be the best.
Yeah.
You didn't talk about race. You didn't talk about gender. You didn't talk about these obstacles that were going to be in my way.
Do you fault her for that?
No, I don't fault her, because as parents, they do the best that they can with the information that they have, right? So
I ask you that because a lot of people do fault their parents for not putting them on to something that they didn't know about. And it's like, you can't blame somebody for not giving you knowledge that they didn't even know.
So the thing is the formula that she gave me, she was successful by applying it, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't fault her for that. But, you know, I have a different reality from her because I grew up in America.
Facts, yeah.
Right? So for her, she's living her dream.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's very hard to tell her otherwise because she's successful in her dream, right? And facts. And her situation was way worse than mine,
worse, yeah.
Not to apply, you know, obstacles or things like that. But at the same time, too, I'm in a position now where I'm like, wow, like this thing happened. Mm-hmm. I have a real reaction to it. And I feel like I just didn't have all of the information to make a sound judgment, right?
Uh-huh.
So after Mike Brown, it really allowed me to go down a new path to say, I am a Black woman, and being a Black woman helps inform my politics. Mm. And it's just been a journey since then.
How do you, what kind of message do you relate to young Black women or minority women, period, that's coming up? Like, what would you say to them?
Yeah, trust your gut.
Yeah.
You know, what you feel is real, right? Because oftentimes we're gaslighted, you know, and in the workplace and in our everyday life, where the things that we feel, because here's the thing, right? You know, there'd be times where I would walk through Neiman Marcus and I feel an energy.
Yeah.
But I can't really speak to it, but everybody feels it, right? It's palpable.
Yeah.
And it's race, right?
Facts.
Where I'm going in to make a purchase and people are looking at me like, how are you making this purchase? Mm-hmm. What do you do for a living? There was one time where I remember making a purchase and a woman laughed and joked. I was with my husband and she was just like, oh, what do you do for a living? And she made a comment about him being a drug dealer and laughed it off.
I spoke on it one of the episodes. I think, matter of fact, Ebony was on the episode when I talked about it. I got on a first class flight and the lady asked me if I played ball. And, you know, just to like, just to throw her off, I said, no, I'm a gynecologist. Mm-hmm. And she kind of looked like she just kept it quiet after that. Because, you know, but it's still like, I don't know if she, because sometimes with older white people, we automatically go to the fact that they're racist or they're trying to be funny. But sometimes they might just not know. They look at me, I'm 6'4", first class, they're probably thinking he might be a, but just for the hell of it, for the culture, I told her, no, I'm a gynecologist, bitch. Like, keep it moving, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, oftentimes we do discount it as, you know, racism, or like they come from a different time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we make excuses, but excuses are never made for us. So, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm, you know, I don't know if it's a help or a hindrance, but I like to call a thing a thing. And if I see you behaving a certain type of way, and I think James Baldwin said it best, where it's like, I don't know if you're racist, but I know your institutions are racist, right? You know, and it's like he broke it down in a way where I don't even want to paraphrase because it doesn't do justice to it. But, you know, he talks about it where it's like, you know, I see your policies, you know, and I see what you guys stand behind and what individuals who look like you do. So it's like, I believe your actions. I don't believe your words. And that's what I lean on.
And, but I mean, it's like, it's one of those things where you don't want to seem like the, like for me as a Black man, I didn't want to just, I just want to dismiss her and also not like give a, the kind of, because she might've been trying to get a reaction out of me, but I just felt like, you know what, that's, this is the simplest way to get her out of my way and be disrespectful towards her too. You get what I'm saying? Because sometimes we just have to play that role.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting how we're dealt like a difficult hand, right? So like, here's this woman in, you know, a seemingly position of power. She's working to represent the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, she holds a lot of power at, whereas you can get on the flight or you can't, right?
No, she was a passenger.
Oh, she was a passenger.
Yes, that's why I was like, yeah, she wasn't working there. She was a passenger.
Oh,
that's why I kind of was like wow. You know, yeah.
But that speaks to privilege, you know, it speaks to this idea where
if you're on this flight at first class at that, it got to be something. You got to be dribbling a basketball or something.
Right. So my thing is, it's like, how do we really combat that? You know, and it's like, also, it's like, it's interesting because you see this new crop of like Karens, right?
Yes.
That people see. And also, I don't like giving them a name because it trivializes what they're doing.
But social media showed them out.
Yeah.
Too, also, like,
yeah, it's like, no, I call it what it is. I don't give them the name of Karen or whatever. It's like this racist woman who's making this racist action.
But isn't that what Karen means, though?
No, it is. But okay, when you give it a name like Karen, it almost it like kind of, minimizes it.
Okay, that
you
makes sense. 100%.
So
yeah,
now all of a sudden there are these like trendy names like Central Park Karen or like no,
just
this,
call her what she is, a fucking racist. Yeah.
On top of that, you have to understand the gravity of it. Yeah. This woman was using the police with the impunity to say, I know if I call this person, they'll it might lead to your death.
Facts, yeah.
So that's a big thing, you know? And it's like, because we are in a position of survival, so oftentimes we've dismissed it.
Facts.
Because black people in general do things with such grace.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that we have said, okay, listen, this is the worst thing that we've dealt with, so we're just going to let it go, or we're going to make light of it, or we're going to laugh at it.
It's a norm. It becomes a norm.
Almost like, you know how people say, like, I laugh to keep from crying?
Yeah.
It's that type of energy for me, where it's like, this woman really called the police in hopes
that they'll come and kill you. Or
because I said I'm a white woman in distress.
Yeah. Now, and she was choking her dog out. She's so worried about putting you in some type of harm's way, she's not even realizing she's harming her own love thing.
Oh, also, not only that, it's like PETA took action immediately.
Yeah.
She lost her job.
Yeah.
Like all of these things were instant ramifications because of it. But at the same time, too, it's like, I don't know if even what PETA did, right, for the dog and like taking action, if black people can garner the same attention from just being black, right?
Yeah.
Like, and also, you know, and this is just an internal conflict where it's like oftentimes we'll turn around and because we're such a compassionate people, we'll turn around immediately and grant forgiveness.
Right.
We saw it in Charleston after the shooting at the church.
Yes.
Where the family almost immediately, almost the same evening said, we forgive you.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to speak on what their journey is. Right. But at the same time, too, it's like, you know, it was something about where the stepfather of Mike Brown came out and he had this visceral reaction saying, no, burn it down.
Yeah.
And I was like, that seems like the normal reaction that anybody would have if their child was murdered.
Yeah.
Senselessly.
Right.
So for me, it's like, how can we really lean into what the normal reaction should be?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, black women can't be angry because we have been troped as the angry black woman.
Black woman, yeah.
Even when we should feel angry about certain situations that happen, we can't because of the trope.
Mm.
So it's like, lean into your anger.
Hell yeah.
Lean into your frustration. Lean into your humanity.
Facts, yeah.
Regardless of how they've tried to strip it from you.
Yeah. Because who was that? What was that? What was the person who died in Dallas when the cop came into the wrong during the trial?
Botham. Gene Botham.
Exactly.
Yes.
Remember, I think it was his brother or somebody hugged the cop or something
in the courtroom.
That broke me. Like, honestly, I couldn't believe my eyes. Like, I'm not that forgiving.
I mean, honestly, I cried, to be honest with you. And remember, the judge came off the dais also.
Yeah. That's a fact. I forgot about that. You're right.
And it makes me emotional now thinking about it, because that same compassion would never be granted.
Ever, 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 ever,
ever, ever, ever, ever, ever. So for me, it's like, you know, it's like, how do we lean into being more compassionate to us, leaning into our community, making sure that we're supported, because we know the system isn't going to show up. And never in my whole life have I ever seen a judge come off the dais to hug.
No, never.
Not in crime shows.
Nothing.
Never.
Ever.
But we saw it here. And you have to ask yourself why.
Hmm. We all know the answer to that.
Yeah.
And what was that? It was something else that I had to. Oh, like when they stormed the Capitol.
Oh, my goodness. Like, we have so much to say about that.
If it was reversed, we know what would have happened.
I mean, we don't even have to imagine it, because last year when we were organizing, you know, for the protest for, you know, George Floyd and Breonna Taylor.
Yeah.
We saw how they really mobilized.
Yeah. And this time, they knew it was coming. It wasn't like a surprise.
No, obviously. Like, they saw on Parler. They saw on, you know, even then, President Trump's tweets saying January 6th is the date.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, we saw it coming. You had the intel. You decided not to act. Yeah. Also, you didn't send the National Guard after you saw what was happening.
Exactly.
And in my mind, I'm like, if you're not going to send the National Guard to protect congressional folks, yeah, you're not going to protect us.
They had their feet up on the tables, everything. Like, they were super comfortable.
Not only that, so many of them now, not only were they able to fly back home, but they're on bail.
Yeah.
And you have a Khalif Browder who committed suicide after for being arrested for something that he didn't even do.
And it was like a stolen book bag or something. Petty. Like, you can't get that. That Khalif Browder story is insane.
It's devastating. It's a reality for so many black and brown folks in this country. You know, it's like the private prison system is a business.
Yeah.
You know?
Big business.
So it's like, if we can't get these dark monies out of politics, and if we can't make sure that congressional folks and elected officials and these wealthy folks are making sure they're not investing in our demise, you know, there's nothing we can really do about it.
And they put big dollar behind that too.
Listen, I think that this is why I continuously lean on community. People power is real. You know, if you have individuals who come to a consensus,
mobilize
about something we value and we all understand is foundational to our well-being, things can happen overnight.
Big facts. When we stick together, we're dangerous. But that's why they throw in little monkey wrenches in any type of community and bring some type of beef. I mean, you
have the whole movie out right now with the Fred Hampton movie.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch that. I think it came out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can bring myself to watch it yet.
Really?
Honestly, truly, I have to literally... I'm someone who's super emotional, first of all. Let me say that. But I have to build myself up to watch certain things, right? Because the thing is, it's like the movie's built around the story of an informant, not Fred Hampton.
Oh, is it?
So they talk about the fact that, you know, this Judas is...
I should call him a Judas, yeah.
I mean that's what
that's
it is.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
But the fact that the story is... The movie, rather, not the story, but the movie is built around the fact that, you know, they were able to, you know, hold this, you know, like crimes against him and say, like, we need you to give up Fred Hampton, essentially.
Right.
And that's what the movie's built around, right? It's not built around the revolution. It's not built around the revolutionary. It's built around this informant, right? And how corrupt the system is. And, you know, one thing my husband told me was like, oh, maybe this is a story about, you know, keeping an eye on certain things, right? Mm. People around you and like making sure you're, you know, you're paying attention to your surroundings and things like that. But
because that's, you know, usually who could put the knife in your back. It's always somebody close to you.
I mean, history tells us that.
Yeah, Jesus, you know? Christ. Anybody, like Malcolm X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, keeping an eye on that. But I'm like, damn, how powerful. And mind you, I haven't watched the movie yet. And I plan to, but.
But it's in the title. I mean.
Yeah. It's like, oh, how can we really center the stories around revolutionary acts? You know, like, how can we center our stories around people who really shaped our mission, right? Fred Hampton.
He was young when he died, like 21, 22?
He was 21 years old,
yeah, about
right?
To say, I didn't watch the movie because it obviously is about to drop, yeah. But I didn't.
This man was the life force behind the Black Panther Party. He created a 10-point plan that really centered community, really centered Black people. He's the one who created the free lunch program, making sure that kids had food before they went to school, after they went to school, making sure parents had food in their household.
Yeah.
He also made sure that their communities were safe and guarded.
Yeah.
You know,
they'd
by
literally
any,
be out
literally.
There, exactly, strapped up, waiting, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like...
We got so far away from that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like, at one point, you know, I don't know if it was the FBI director at the time, but there was somebody in a position like his where they were asked, what is the number one threat against America? And he literally said, Negro unity.
Yes, exactly.
So just think about that for a second. The fact that Black people are organizing and mobilizing, and the fact that that was directly in opposition to America, lets you know where, and that wasn't that long ago,
right?
Mind you.
Right.
So for me, it's like, it's hard for me to think about the ideology of America shifting in such a short amount of time, right? Mm. So it's like, yes, we're leaning towards progress. Yes, we're bending towards progress. But that's only because Black people are making democracy true.
Yeah.
We're making the words of the Constitution true every chance we get. That's what we just saw in Georgia. Mm-hmm. That's what we see Black women organizing and mobilizing to do. So for me now, it's like, how can we continuously make that true?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the number one superpower we really have isn't our military.
No.
It's our democracy.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we lean into that and making that true? And that's a lot of the work that I'm trying to do now.
Who would have thought Georgia would flip like that?
I mean, Stacey Abrams did.
What were you saying in pre-production? She had a plan?
Yeah. So Stacey Abrams actually had a 10-year plan.
And what year was she in now?
She's in year 9 of that 10-year plan, right?
That's crazy.
It's very wild when you think about it. But the thing is, it's like Stacey Abrams said that she wanted to turn Georgia blue, right? She understands. And it's so brilliant when you think about it, right? So Georgia, it's not that Black people don't turn out to vote. It's that our vote is suppressed. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's like there's so many measures. She lost her race because they actually stole the election. If you want to really talk about the big lie, they stole the election from Stacey Abrams, right? Not Trump. So the fact that she turned around and said, listen, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and do the work that's important, even though they stole this race from me. So many people after a loss, they bury their head in the sand.
For sure. Yeah.
Right?
They give up.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that she said, listen, I'm going to build out Fair Fight Georgia. I'm going to connect with organizers and activists across the state. They registered 800,000 people.
That's crazy.
800, almost a million folks, right? Who said, thank you for seeing us. Thank you for recognizing the work that we're doing and understanding that our vote is essential and crucial, right?
Yeah.
And now, and probably the most important election, and I know we say that every single election cycle, that this is the most important election cycle.
That is definitely, you're right.
But this is the first time in my life I really felt it, where I thought like, wow, if Trump wins again.
We in trouble.
I'm not sure what he may be capable of and with another 4 years. Yeah. We've seen what he's been able to do, right? So now it's at a point where I'm like, okay, cool. She's created the plan. She saw the vision. She worked the plan.
Yeah.
And now she turned Georgia blue. So
that's
crazy. We could do the same thing. We're right next door.
But like you said, community.
Community is where it's at. And also, you know, we can't front. Money's where it's at
for
too.
Sure.
Yeah.
But we have money. It's not like we're the biggest spending group.
Demographic, yeah.
Yeah. Like it's crazy how much we spend, but we won't put it towards the right things. We need to start doing it towards the right things.
I won't even say we were not putting it towards the right things. It's that we need individuals who can speak the language to really mobilize folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if I told you like, yo, I got a business opportunity for you. This is your investment. This is what you're going to get back. You know, it's a return on investment,
Clear cut.
You're going to be like, boom, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be the same language when it comes to politics. We don't understand our return on investment.
Facts.
Right?
Yeah.
But at the same time too, for instance, we're on the east side of Charlotte. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this is the most diverse district in all of the city, you know? We should have an immigrant representing us here.
Yeah.
You know?
Instead of, what's Buddy's name?
Matt Newton, right? Yeah. And, you know, Matt's great. And, like, I'm certain he's a great leader. However, you have to represent the community here.
Right.
So when you have low voter turnout, you have to understand why is your message not working?
Yeah.
Because politics is a number game when you're trying to get elected, right?
Yeah.
So if you only need 3,200 votes.
That would be a lot easier if it's somebody from my cloth as opposed to him.
Yeah. So for me now, it's like I care deeply about if the community is represented in the seat, you know, and this being the most diverse district.
Right.
Let's make sure that we have that proper representation. Let's make sure that individuals here are represented in their voice and also see themselves in the seat as well. That's really important.
That's very important.
Yeah.
That's very, very important.
Yeah.
Because East Charlotte, that's literally minorities. Like if you drive around East Charlotte, you see Black people, Hispanics.
Yep.
Like Central Avenue is so like literally it starts off with Hispanics, and then when you get closer to uptown area, it's a lot of Somalians, East Africans, just period. And then when you get closer to uptown, it gets to the white. But
yeah,
Laos. We got a lot of Asians, Vietnamese. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you know when I hear you say all of that in my mind, I'm like, we need that representation.
Yeah.
That's, people will see that and think my vote doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, one, we don't have candidates that I see myself in. which is important, but also we need to make sure that when these people run for office, that they're supported.
Yeah.
But, I think it speaks to individuals not really understanding their civic duty. Oftentimes, yeah. It lives and dies with us just voting.
That was my next question, is how do we change that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is people who are listening to your podcast right now.
Right.
Who say, oh, Trump, lost, but, maybe I don't really identify with the, local, state, and federal government right now, and mm-hmm. I don't feel a change in my life,
right. Right.
Because a lot of people, will vote and think, oh, change is on the horizon.
Yeah.
And when nothing changes, it's like, oh, I'm never voting again.
This happens all the time.
But at the same time, too, that's just the beginning of your civic duty.
Yeah.
You need to show up. When Nipsey said, a city council meeting, hustle speaking, exactly. that's real. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he was showing up and doing the work.
Right.
It's like, how can we make sure that we are also doing the same? How can we make sure that when we show up and elected officials see us walking down the street, they want to cross the street because we know we're about to be a problem for
exactly.
you.
Exactly, yeah.
How come, this pothole isn't fixed? How come, the Title I schools are running rampant in my district? How come, there isn't, broadband Wi-Fi for people who fall in the digital divide, especially students now who are at home full time? It's all of these things where it's like, we need to hold individuals accountable, but if we don't know the right points to push, that's an issue, right? That's on us.
Yeah.
Because I'm someone who's of the mind that government isn't coming here to save us.
No, hell no.
We have to save ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And as we're waiting for them to do the right thing, we need to make sure we're implementing things that we know we can do on ourselves. Like, there are initiatives that we can start here today. For instance, like, I have a workshop where it's civic engagement one-on-one, helping people get ready to run for office. Let's get the information, right? I have the resources. I have the information. I have the knowledge. I also have the community behind me to say, hey, I'm not hoarding this information for myself.
Yeah.
Take the information.
Right.
Build up your communities.
Mm-hmm.
Let's collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Let's build power, win justice, and figure out a way for us to move forward, right? Elevate together.
It's really not that hard if you really just take the steps.
It's about us understanding and coming to consensus about what we value. If you're someone who says, hey, I care deeply about individuals in this community not being displaced by gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
Which is happening across the city.
The whole state, the whole U.S. is happening.
Right.
Yeah.
How can we stop this, right?
Right.
Sharice, who was just on your show, has a sweatshirt that says,
Don't sell your grandmother's house.
Right?
Please let me get one of them shirts. I'm buying one of them shirts. Yes. I need those.
Immediately, yes. Right? That's the campaign. But I think...
I don't mean to cut you off. I was literally watching something today that said, African Americans' home ownership has went down, and I think it's almost like, I think it either went down 40% or we're at 40%. So don't quite quote me on that, but we're literally going backwards with that.
Yeah.
But minority, like foreigners are going up as far as like Africans, like,
mm-hmm.
but Black Americans are literally selling everything they own because they want that fast cash.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of the reason why you'll hear these conversations happening on different platforms, including like Clubhouse with American descendants of slaves,
mm-hmm.
where it's like individuals here. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Banks rather do business with immigrants.
Yeah.
And they understand like, oh, okay, maybe I'll have a better return on my investment if I do work with immigrants because of the survival mentality, right? Rather than working with Black Americans. And where that,
Business with them, but they do it on the reverse. No. What they do is they'll offer you $300,000 for your grandmother's house.
But no, here's the thing, right? So for instance, if my dad went to a bank and said, hey, I want to do business with you, more than likely they'll do business with him
than a
neighbor down the street who's lived their entire life, right? And that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
How can we address those systemic issues that are affecting us differently, also pitting us against each other indirectly, right? So now, if you're, ADOS, individual who's saying banks are not willing to do business with me,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing business with you, all of a sudden I become your enemy.
Facts.
So now all of a sudden we're not in consensus with one another.
Nah.
We're not building
together.
We're divided.
Together.
Yes. Yeah. Even though we look alike, even though we face the same oppression.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that the oppression we have is a
common
little bit
different. Enemy, and if you exactly. for lack of a better term, but if they make us pin against each other, we're never gonna look at our enemy. We're yeah. just gonna be like, yo.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's like if I, you know, it was something I was reading earlier with from Audre Lorde, who's a Black woman writer. Mm-hmm. She talked a lot about the system, like us working the system internally by us telling ourselves no before anyone tells us no, right? So that's the system actually working, right?
Wait, how so? What do you mean?
So for instance, like if I'm sitting here thinking about building community, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like thinking about like my neighbors down the street that I want to build a community with and right. like stopping myself thinking like, oh, maybe my neighbor doesn't want to collaborate with me. Maybe the bank doesn't want to do business with me.
Oh, so basically getting in your own way.
Yeah. So it's like stopping myself. That's the system also at work.
For sure. Yeah. Exactly.
So it's like you've internalized, so you know, this white supremacy yes. and like all of this, that this is the system, at larger system at work, right? Where it's like, I'm not even going to allow you to tell me no. I'm going to tell myself no.
Tell
first,
myself no.
Right?
That's
that it
evil.
Can't work. Yeah.
God.
And that ultimately, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I want to like fight against that. You know, I want us to really feel like, let's sacrifice whatever egos we have yeah. in order to build community, whatever obstacles we may be facing internally when we're at home, where we're alone, where
right.
we're with our own inner thoughts. Let's lean into vulnerability. Let's yeah. lean into community in a real way to really build a future that we want to see. You know, I think it's possible, but we have to really believe in one another and not in our worst, like, base thoughts, right?
Right.
You know, I've had neighbors, right, who I've heard literally in their own backyards talking about, you know, oh, they're Muslim. We really don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're watching on CNN. They're hearing about ISIS.
2001
all these
fucked everything up.
And they're like connecting those things and also identifying us because we identify as Muslim with those things as well.
Right.
Even though we're their neighbors.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even though when they go on vacation, they knock on our door to say, hey, can you watch over our property?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so for me, it's like that, those very small details on an everyday basis.
Propaganda.
Yeah. Let's not overlook those things, right? Like, let's really lean on what community really is. Like, I'm entrusting my life with yours.
Yeah.
That's what I think community is, right?
Hell yeah.
So it's like, how can we build towards that on a broader level? Let's make sure that we're building on a local level. All politics is local at the end of the day. And that's what I yeah. care about.
That's another thing. We only care to vote for the majority every 4 years.
Yeah, presidential election cycles.
Right? How yeah. important is it with the two-year elections?
Listen, I think that you should show up for every election. But I'm honestly, truly think that it's more important and imperative that you show up every 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Special elections, municipal elections,
right.
city council, county commission,
student. Judges, all that.
Oh, you elect your DA. So
yes.
Deed of register.
Like, and the crazy
all
thing is,
things.
I didn't, none of this shit meant anything to me. Just within the last 4 or 5 years, that's when I really started really paying attention to it, because I always was under the belief that, like, it's rigged almost.
A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're not alone in that. We know that the system's rigged.
That's
like
what I'm saying.
Like recently, you know, with GameStop, right?
Oh,
and the stock market,
Robin
right?
Hood.
You know? I was like,
man.
You guys are really showing your hand right
yes,
now.
Yes, big
right?
time.
It's like, oh, invest your money, but not like that.
Exactly.
Oh, build your wealth, but not like
but
that.
But not like that. Yeah, like, ho, y'all learning
know?
The game. Don't do that.
Oh, yeah. And it was a bunch of individuals online who said, we're going to organize to stop these major
hedge funds.
Yeah. So it's like, that's people power at work.
Bingo. That's a fact. That's community.
That's
what we've
community.
Been talking about this whole fucking time.
Yeah.
That's community.
So it's like, and it happened overnight.
Yeah.
Where somebody posted it and said, hey, we're going to double down on this short.
Right.
We're going to make sure that this stock rises. And
yeah.
they all leaned on it. And they had trust
they had,
in one another.
Exactly.
That was another
yeah.
thing, too.
Yeah, they believed.
Don't sell
yeah.
your stock yet.
Exactly.
We're building up the stock, right?
Right.
And listen, don't let me tell you, because I don't know the first thing about stocks. But when I yeah. heard about that, I was like, wow, this is community.
Yes.
Right? Like, for instance, one thing I think about oftentimes is like a couple of years ago when the Dakota Pipeline was like being built out. This was at the first year of Trump's presidency where so many people descended upon Dakota, right?
Right.
Indigenous folks, veterans, mothers, Black folks, white folks. They said, we need to go down here and support these individuals. And they really supported one another. And I was like, wow, this is what community looks like. Showing up for people and issues that don't impact your life.
Mm.
right? That's the only way we're going to be able to show up for each other, right? Like, and it blew my mind when I saw it, because I was like, damn, the only way we're going to dismantle racism is if white people say enough is enough.
But a lot of people have, like with the Black Lives Matter, and there's a lot of things that a lot of white people have been waking up. And yeah, before they would see it, but they'd be like, I'm not going to, that's not my fight. But I think a lot of people are waking up now too.
I think that is the case. I think that a lot of folks woke up during Trump's administration and said, this is not who we are.
Yeah.
And I've also seen a lot of folks say like, oh, you know, we're going to go back to the racism that we're comfortable with.
Yeah,
with Biden. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, one thing I've always asked like my white counterparts is like, what are you willing to sacrifice? You know, because at the end of the day, it's like we're fighting for justice for Black and brown folks in this country. Right.
Right.
But as white folks, you really need to show up and sacrifice your privilege in order to make sure that the whole of us are good. So that's one thing that I'm interested in pushing the boundaries on. Like, let's really show up. You know, if you're saying you're a part of this community, you care about us, you know, as a human race,
yeah,
you know, prove it.
Facts. Yeah. It's really that simple. Like,
yeah,
if people make it seem like it's a lot harder than what it is. And I don't know, it felt weird. Like, I went uptown. Well, that's what we call downtown here in Charlotte. Yeah. We call it the uptown. I know. But as many white people that I saw, it was kind of like shocking. Like, I stepped back and just was looking like, look how many white people are standing beside everybody. And it was dope to see it. Like, I can't lie. Like, and I've never been the one for like white acceptance. Like, if you fuck with me, you fuck
with
me.
Wait, explain that.
Like, for instance, I always got, and this is at a young age, like people would be like rappers, for instance, would be mad about, oh, the Grammys don't accept us. Mm-hmm. And I used to be like, why do you care about the Grammys? Like, who cares about white acceptance? Like, if people rock with you, they rock with you. If not, but then also I came from community. So I never cared about who's not accepting me from outside of my community.
Yeah.
Like, I'm East African. I'm Eritrean.
Yeah.
Sci-fi, we all grew up in the same law. Like, we were so connected and community driven.
Yeah.
I don't care about who. And that's not to say that we don't love them. We don't have, you know, we don't have white friends or Hispanic friends or whatever, but we're so worried about our own community that we don't care about who's rocking with us outside of our community.
Right.
So, and I understand with like the Black American culture, it's like, it was a lot of people were stripped of who they were.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, there was an, almost like an, I hate to say an identity crisis in a sense, but like, I don't know, because sometimes people will mistake what I say, so I don't even want to get too deep into that. But we're so worried about, we're not worried about who rocks with us.
Yeah.
Who's not rocking with us. We're already. Listen,
I always say validation is for parking, not people.
And that's exactly, for you said it, you summed it up pretty well. Like, so we don't even have to get into too much. But like, I never cared about who's not liking me. Mm-hmm. Because it was, somebody was giving an example, like for Instagram, right? You put up a picture, not you per se, but just anybody. Like, you put up a picture, you get 100 comments. I love you. You're the best. I love your work. One person would say,
right,
you're a fucking cornball, right, or whatever. You will respond to that person. Most people will respond to that hate as opposed to the 99 people who said they love you. Right. And it's like,
it's just human nature.
It is, but like,
right? Because as a human race, we want to be liked.
Yeah, we do.
We want to be liked. We want people to fuck with
but
us.
But we have to get to the point where who cares who doesn't like you? At that point, you should just delete whoever said you negative. Just delete that fucking comment and keep it moving. And just worry about who's loving you. You get what I'm saying? Like, instead of worrying about who's not rocking with you.
Yeah. I think it is human nature where we want to be liked so much. So when we do get that one comment, it's like, what do they mean that by that?
Yeah.
Like,
how dare you? Or like, what you mean?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's just, it's funny because like before, I think right before like I, you know, reshaped my Instagram or whatever, like I, you know, oftentimes I'll post political videos. I recently did one on the fight for $15 minimum wage and things like that. And I talked about the new bill, right? Because the headlines oftentimes are misleading, right? They want to pull out the most provocative quote, right? So I really broke it down, you know, because a lot of folks thought like, oh, fight for 15 is going to happen now, right? We have the House, we have the Senate, we have the White House. Bernie Sanders is now the chairman of the Budgetary Committee. Like, all of these things is going to happen. So when they see that, like, oh, it's going to happen, I was like, no, let me break it down for you what it actually means. And it's going to be incremental and piecemeal, right?
Right.
So I broke it down, and there was this mind you, it was maybe like 150 people who left comments, right? It was one woman who was just like, mind you, the video is 5 minutes. She left a comment and said something to the effect of like, you know, you said a lot but didn't say anything. And mind you, my series is called Context Matters, right? So I'm giving you context as to how we got to this point, right?
Right.
So yes, 5 minutes may be long-winded for social media right now. But, you know, in my mind, I was just like, wow, you know, you left this comment. Nothing else but that. Mind you, you don't follow me. Yeah. Didn't like the post. Didn't leave any type of constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, people who I really fuck with are on your ass. You know what I mean? They leave in comments. They're going back and forth with you. Like, sis, you should have kept it pushing. Like, what do you have to say? And she was going back and forth about, oh, Lula's an influencer and she should be ready for these type of comments and all of these type of things. And I was like, sis, influencer. Like, you got the game fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm only, and that's really what got me thinking, like, damn, like, not just that one comment, but I was like, I want to make sure that anything that I'm doing, I'm talking about impact rather than influence.
Right.
That matters to me, right?
Big time.
You know, I want people to see my page, see what I'm doing, the work that I'm doing. One, letting them know that it's possible. Two, knowing that I'm accessible. But three, don't get it fucked up either.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of the work that I've done is hard work. You know, it's been the last 15 years of my life trying to build something where Black women know that, yo, don't worry about them giving you a seat at the table. Build your own table. Invite your own people. And really build towards that.
I hate the wanting a seat at the table. That's my, I don't like that shit. Like, make your own fucking table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? I understand. It's not, it might be a little harder.
It will be harder.
You know what I'm saying? But I don't want to go nowhere where I'm tolerated.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like,
1,000%.
When I'm there, I want people to be like, oh shit, Mez is here. Like, not, oh, this nigga Mez is here. Like, I don't want that. Like, I want you to be happy when you know what I'm saying? Like, that, but that's community.
Yeah. And also,
I think that's the name of this episode. We're going to name it Community.
Yeah. No, I feel that. Yeah. I mean, and also understanding that, you know, you're always going to be the villain in somebody's story. Too.
For sure.
You always. Know what I mean? That's another thing, too. It's like, as you're building community, there's going to be people who are going to be staunch opponents of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
People thinking that you could do it better. Do it this way.
Yeah.
Also, they've never sacrificed anything.
Never.
Never put anything on the line, but want to tell you how to do it.
Never put their feet in your shoes, ever. But they're going to tell you exactly what you need to do.
So it's like, you know, one thing that, you know, I try to do oftentimes, and like my husband Brian tells me all the time, is like, you know, really building yourself up for it, you know, like accepting the pressure that's going to come, you know. That's one thing that I always try to do as well. It's like, it's difficult because, like I said, I am an emotional person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, trying to be intentional and pure about the work that I'm doing, you know, but at the same time, too, it's like having a, you know, a really strong message and mission about the work that you're doing and staying steadfast in that.
In sports, they call those Monday morning quarterbacks, like the motherfucker at work at Monday, like, yo, if Tom Brady should have did this. You sitting there talking about what you would have did if you were Tom Brady, but you're not Tom Brady.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's crazy because, like, you know, obviously, like, you know, Kobe passed last year, but the
rest
stories that people told, I was like, wow, this is legacy, right? You know what I mean? Like, even like with Nipsey, right?
It's that was like, my next question. What was Nipsey to you?
I mean, for me, he was, you know, everything, right? Not only being East African, but letting me know that, like, you know, doing community oriented work will never be lost.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, making people feel something, right? Yeah. You know, there's like, you know, stories that people came out with afterward about like, man, he did this for me.
The electrician, did you hear the story about that electrician?
No, tell me.
Basically, the guy didn't even know that it was Nipsey Hussle. Like they were on, I guess, Crenshaw or somewhere just working, and Nipsey would literally come out and give him like food, water, little things like that. And he would go home and tell his wife every day, like, yo, there's a guy who owns the store over here. And then when he died, he was like, that's the guy I was telling you about. She was like, it's Nipsey. Like, but it's the little things that you do for your community that impact people to where you don't even understand.
Right. I mean, just thinking about the way that he died, right?
Disgusting.
He hired felons. That's why nobody was strapped.
Yeah.
In his store, right?
Yeah.
So it's like just thinking about that, you know, thinking about the most vulnerable among us and giving them opportunities, right? And also not leaving. He could have left.
Yeah.
You know, he could have been anywhere.
Most people do.
You know, and he decided to stay in his community, build up his community, And it's just like, for me, it's like so many lessons and blueprints that he's left for us, you know? It's a real legacy that he's left for us. So for me, it's like, it really doubled down this idea that, like, focus on community, build your community, you know, don't discount anybody that you meet, right?
Yeah.
You can learn something from everybody. And also, you never know what impact you might leave on somebody's life that could, you know, make the next big idea or do the next big thing, you know? So it's, for me, it's like, when I saw that, and, you know, obviously, you know, he's East African, so all of us kind of knew him already. You know what I mean? It's like we knew about his work, his music, all of that, because we wanted to support him. But, you know, after he passed, I was like, wow, for him to really affect the world that he did with his passing lets you know that he was bigger and larger than life.
Huge. And you're right. You can learn a lot from anybody. Like, you could be a man on the street sleeping in a tent. You could learn a lot from it. Remember them commercials back in the day with the crash dummies? You could learn a lot from a dummy.
Oh, yeah.
And that, when I was a kid, I'm like, how the fuck could you learn from a dummy? But you get older, you're like, oh, shit. Even from a dummy, you can learn what not to do.
Yeah.
That's learning in itself.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I think really, like, brilliance is, like, not having to go through the hardship and learn the lesson.
Learning you see somebody, from somebody else's experience. Because people be like, learn from your own mistakes. But I could learn from somebody else's mistakes and be just as wise.
Yeah. I mean, for him to have, like, the, you know, the vision to say, I'm going to charge $1,000 for my CD.
Even if, I remember when he first dropped the 100, we had a Nipsey Hussle episode on Mez Drinks and Chill when his 1 year anniversary hit. I remember when he dropped the Crenshaw mixtape, he said, I'm going to charge $100 for it. The backlash he was getting from is like, who does he think he is? He's not even that big of an artist to do it. And it's like, bro, when you have community,
not
you
only
can
that,
do that.
Yo, and then you have a Jay-Z come and buy...
What was it? 1,000 copies.
No, but that's what it was. He didn't charge $1,000. Jay-Z came and bought 1,000 copies.
Yeah. But he did charge for the mailbox money. He started charging $1,000 for that because his goal was the first one, $100 CD, Crenshaw. He said, I want to sell 1,000 at $100.
Yeah.
And then when he flipped it to selling it at 1,000, he said, I want to sell 100 of that.
Yeah.
It's basically his whole motto was fuck the middleman.
All money in,
no money out. But. Yeah. Shouts to Nip, man. We definitely miss Nip.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, you know, when he passed, you know, I organized an event in Brooklyn or whatever. And, you know, initially I was like, okay, you know, being an organizer, I thought whoever comes is supposed to show up.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, I want to say, like, 75 to 100 people showed up.
Yeah.
And everybody had a story, you know, about how he, like, really left an impact on their life. And most of them never met him.
Yeah.
You know, might have seen him in concert or something like that, but they really talked about community, right? And, like, it was a real showing of, like, wow, this man impacted all of us and we don't know each other. And a lot of people still from that day I still keep in contact with. But I was just like, damn, that's the real impact we could have, right?
Yeah.
Nipsey changed the world with his passing, but that lets me know about his legacy while he was here.
Facts, yeah. I met him one time. It was real brief, but just the thing about him was he treated everybody like a regular person. Like, he didn't seem like he was too high up. Like, he just, and if most people, I don't approach celebrities. Like, I just don't, that's just something I don't do. But it just, he just seemed like one of the homies.
Yeah.
But that was a dope episode, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. No, I'm excited to be on. And I think, like, I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Hopefully, like, we'll connect soon. And also, I'm excited about what you do next.
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot coming from you because you're very impactful, and a lot of people rock with you. Like, I'm telling you, like, people were hitting me up, like, you have to get on the show. I'm like, who is she? Like, why? And there's so many women who really rock with you, like, from all sorts, though. Like,
thank you.
So it's really dope to have you on here. I appreciate you coming on. That means a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Savai, anything you want to say? And we signing out. It's Mez Drinks and Chill. That first song, damn, I didn't even plug it. I'm tripping. That was Sonia Tuchlight, and that song was called Itch. As a matter of fact, she dropped a book, too. It's like a self-help book. I think it's called Note to Self, if I'm not mistaken. But and now we're going to leave y'all out with Ciroc. This is his latest track, and it's called Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you for listening. We're signing out.
I'll I'll be the one to take the risk to go and get them bands. I'll be the one to never sit and go and make a plan. Knowing my mother getting old and I don't got no time. Gotta keep a couple for the road, the rest get left behind. Yeah. To the hundreds, pledge allegiance, I stand. I'm going to pull four in the fucking white sand. I give it all to this fucking mic stand. If it's been done before, then I know I can. I'm on the rise, I'm trying to keep a level head. She want my time, she begging me to give me near. I'd rather shed blood to the ground while I'm here. Put some weight on top my name, my time here is not clear. I told Beretta VV diamonds all up in the chamber. My homie mother shooting up, I feel like I gotta save her. Government babies with no luck, we grew up from the pavement. I'm running around with all the ones that said we'll never make it. Yeah, get a nickel, turn a dime to a Bentley. Like I've been here before and it's like my second living. Really feel the safe up, young nigga from the digits. I really came up trying to show you how we live. I'll be the one to take the risk to go and get them bands. I'll be the one to never sit and go and make a plan. Knowing my mother getting older and I don't got no time. Gotta keep a couple for the road, the rest get left behind. Yeah. To the hundreds, pledge allegiance, I stand. I'm gonna pull four in the fucking white sand. I give it all to this fucking mic stand. If it's been done before, then I know I can. It took a break from all this shit to stay off all we can. I ran it up.